Whoa, we are back for the Of Home at Advantage Wrestling Podcast. I'm Sam Herring, joined by Yanni Diakomihalis on this fine Wednesday morning. Now, I want to get through some things before we start our interview, and the first is letting you guys know that Jude is gone at camp for the next couple of weeks, so it'll just be me running some interviews while he's gone. Really sorry about that. We'll miss Jude while he's gone. And then on August 11th, we should have an interview with Sean Russell coming out. Sean Russell is a Minnesota All-American. And let's just introduce Yanni so we can get this show rolling. He is one of just 7 four-time New York High School state champions while wrestling at Hilton High School. He helped his team to 4 state titles as a 5-time captain. He ranked among the top 3 recruits in the nation by every major ranking service. He joins Gable Steveson as the only American to win 2 cadet world championships. He is a 2-time NCAA champion in his first 2 years at Cornell. He is a 2019 U.S. Open champion in one of the toughest weights in America. He is a Yasar Dogu champion, and he's fresh off a Ziolkowski title in Poland. He just returned from Poland. So I hope you guys enjoy this interview, and be rolling it next. Thanks, guys. Hey, Yanni, what's up?
Hey, man, how you been? I'm doing good. Doing good.
So you just got back from Poland, wrestled at the, what was that tournament, the Ziolkowski?
The Ziolkowski Memorial. So in Poland, they had the Ziolkowski Memorial, which is the freestyle. They had the Pilotinski, which is the Greco, and they had the Poland Open, which is the women's tournament. So pretty big tournament, a lot of teams there. So it's good.
How was Poland? Do you like it?
Yeah, it was great. It was kind of funny. You know, it was their, I guess they call it like summer period where, you know, there's not a ton of people there, which made it really interesting because we kind of had the city to ourselves a little bit where, you know, we'd walk around, but, you know, 90% of the people that you saw there were just wrestling people.
Wow. That's cool. Weird. They all left for the summer.
So, yeah, I guess there's, like, a vacation period. Not a vacation period, but, like, pretty much if you're not working, you know, or your job demands that you're there for, you know, that little 2-week period, people just, you know, they travel, they'll go somewhere else, they'll vacation, and then everyone comes back and just works. So instead of people taking, you know, regular vacations on their own time, like how it is in the States, it's like, all right, you know, this 2 to 3 week period, you guys can do whatever you want pretty much. And then you got to come back. It's kind of cool.
Do you like Poland or Turkey better?
They had their advantages to each of them. So
yeah.
Turkey, the hotel we were in was really nice. It had a little store right there. And being able to go to the Grand Bazaar and, you know, the sightseeing in Turkey was, you know, really, really cool. But then in Poland, it was more European. You know, by the time we left, it felt like, you know, we were in an American city. It didn't even really feel like a foreign country, you know. So that was cool.
Well, hey, let's talk about Muzykayev. Did he talk to you in Poland at all or tell you I'm forfeiting or any reason behind it?
He's like kind of my buddy. Every time I see him now, he comes up to me, says hi, and like shakes my hand. And we were talking on the medal stand, you know, in Turkey. But he had a tough match with a German. Well, I mean, he was like killing him. And then he was up 9-0 or something and ended up winning the match, you know, 9-7 or something because he got really tired. And I watched it because I thought I was going to wrestle him after. And I didn't notice that he got hurt, but then he started limping around and, you know, he said his knee hurt. But I was, you know, we'll see. Maybe he's just limping around and he'll end up wrestling the match anyway. And then I'm warming up and the Hungary coach comes up to me, you know, the Hungarian national team coach. Mm-hmm. And he's just like, he doesn't speak English very well, so he just made the X with his hands. And I was like, I'm what? And he's like, Muzykayev, no wrestle. And I was like, man, that sucks. And, you know, I came up to him and he was icing his knee. So I think he was actually hurt. You know, maybe he wasn't that injured and was milking it. But from what I understand, he might have actually been injured.
Yeah, he might have been mentally injured too after the Dogu.
Yeah. You know, you're definitely like, I don't know if I want to wrestle that one again.
Yeah, that one looked painful for him.
Yeah.
All right, let's get into the question about your wrestling a little bit. The first one, what got you into wrestling and what was your first impression of the sport?
So my dad wrestled in college and, you know, he wasn't, like, he'll be the first one to tell you he wasn't, you know, super successful, but he worked so hard. And, you know, he was Division III All-American. So he wrestled, you know, through college, and it was something – and he helped coach afterwards, and he stayed around it, and it was something that, you know, was, like, a really big part of his life. So he wanted me to get into it. I started when I was, you know, maybe 5 or 6 years old, and then – I don't know, when you're a little kid, if it's fun and, you know, you enjoy it and your parents want you to do it, you're going to do it. And,
right.
You know, as I got older, I enjoyed it more, and it just became something that was so normal in my life that, you know, it was like, why wouldn't I go to practice? Why wouldn't I keep wrestling, you know? And then when I got older and I got better, you know, my dad, you know, was more into it, and he was like, listen, you have the opportunity to be really good if you're willing to do it. And that was kind of how I got really serious about it.
Did you immediately love it, or did that take a while to create that passion?
So I always liked it, but I think the more I did it, the more I loved it. You know, I think this is with, you know, a lot of people tell you this. It's hard to just start something and be like, man, you know, this is great. I loved everything about it. You know what I mean? Especially when you're a little kid, sometimes you don't even really understand what you're doing. But
right.
The more I did it, it, like, the best way I can explain it is it just became something that I didn't even remember what life was like before it. So it like now I understand, you know, how important it is to me, but growing up, it was like, what would life be? I didn't even know what life would be like if I didn't do this. So it was something that it was part of how I identified myself. You know what I mean?
Right. Did you play any other sports when you were younger?
I don't know. Like, your parents always have you do stuff. I played T-ball and I was terrible at it. I played, like, little kid soccer, you know, when I was 5 years old. I played football until 8th grade because I was just willing to let huge people run into me and then tackle them. So I played defense a lot. And then, you know, when you're a 105-pound 8th grader, that's usually when you stop playing football before you get your head blown off. So
in high school especially. Yeah,
yeah, seriously. You get some 300-pound dude trying to kill you. So that was when I stopped.
So you were talking about your dad and his impact on your wrestling and how he kind of got you into it. How did he impact your view on the sport? How was he able to help form your wrestling style?
So my dad, to this day, I still consider him, you know, my coach, you know, one of my coaches. And, you know, he's been my coach my whole life. And his big thing was so this is partially because of our resources. You know, we didn't know, you know, what good lifting was like, and we didn't do crazy conditioning, but my dad was very willing to study film and to learn wrestling. And mm-hmm. What he thought was the most important part of the sport was being able to, you know, be more skilled than your opponent. So the biggest, you know, proponent of how my dad trained me was that he wanted me to be better than the guys I was wrestling. So he was really big on pushing skill on me. And we watched a lot of European technique because, you know, those guys, they don't win on, I mean, they do sometimes, but they don't win on conditioning. You know, it's just two guys and better skilled wrestler wins. And, you know, my dad was really interested in the Russian wrestling style, you know, it's this good variety of technique and it's very athletic and dynamic. So that was kind of my dad's long-term vision for me. You know, he wanted me to be able to wrestle a lot of positions and out wrestle people. So even when I was a kid and I would lose matches where, you know, that happens all the time when you're a little kid, you lose matches because someone's, you know, more mature, bigger, stronger. You know, my dad, like, those were matches he was like, it's all right, you know, you just wait, you just keep working skills. And that was kind of where the results started to come.
How do you think that's helped you when you're wrestling European guys now that you're so comfortable with their style?
So I think it's good because inherently they're going to be more familiar with it because all their training partners have that style. But the fact that, you know, it was introduced to me at such a young age, it's not as much of a culture shock, you know, when you get over there. Because wrestling, I'll say, wrestling Europeans is very different than wrestling Americans. You know, they're
right.
It's just, they don't have, I don't know how to say it. As soon as you wrestle someone, you can tell whether or not they wrestled in the States or if they wrestled, you know, in an overseas country for most of their life.
Mm-hmm.
And thankfully, you know, because it was introduced to me at a young age, that transition, I think, was a little easier for me than maybe somebody who, you know, never got that feel. But, you know, some people would argue the opposite.
Yeah, that makes sense. Did you wrestle at clubs when you were younger, multiple different ones, or did your dad kind of specialize with one club, or how did that work?
This is a funny story. So I went to Hilton High School. I wrestled like the Hilton Red Dogs youth program.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, when I was 9, 10 years old, my dad was like, all right, that's it. I'm coaching you exactly how I want. So, you know, we took a handful of kids that I trained with. It was the Duprés, you know, like Louis Duprés. He's at Blood Round this year at Binghamton.
Oh, yeah.
He's got older brothers. He's got a younger brother who's going to be a freshman this year. and you know, a couple other kids too. And he was like, "All right, that's it. We're putting mats in the garage. I'm putting a space heater, and we're training there." And you know, still, when I go home and train, I train in my wrestling mats in my garage. And that's where everything went down. That's where all my training happened. And you know, we traveled a lot. We went to VHW a lot to train with Vito, you know, his dad's club. Mm-hmm. We'd go to Pitbull, and I'd wrestle with those guys because Sonny Abe was the coach. I'd wrestle with like Vincenzo Joseph and, you know, those guys who wrestled at Pittsburgh. And, you know, I do camps and stuff. But for the most part, you know, my home base was literally my home base. It was my garage. So that was where most of my training was at.
That's funny. And who all did you train with? You said Vito DePraise. Do you train with Greg?
Yep. A little bit. You know, he's younger than me, but he was younger and smaller. So honestly, I could probably wrestle with him more now because he's starting to catch up to me a little bit. He's, you know, 125 pounds. So,
yeah.
You know, especially when he gets to college, not this coming year, but the following year, you know, he'll start wrestling college guys, putting some size on. I'll be able to train with him more. But, yeah.
Did you have much success early on?
So, I was, like, not bad, you know, when I was a little kid. I'd win a lot locally, and we'd go to Pennsylvania, and I'd win tournaments now and then. But, you know, I wasn't, like, a youth superstar, you know, like you hear about some of those kids. But it was funny. My dad had a love-hate relationship with youth wrestling because youth wrestling is great. And I'll preach this to any parent who has young kids wrestling. I really believe you need to compete a lot as a young kid, not to the point where it burns you out. But I think competing, you put those kids in those situations that, you know, you develop mat wrestling IQ and you develop match strategy and, you know, you learn how to wrestle. Because in the end, I can make you wrestle live in practice, but it's not the same as competition.
Absolutely.
And I think that that was something that my dad understood for me and had me competing a lot, you know, as a young kid. And again, I liked it, and it was fun for me, and I didn't cut weight. I didn't, you know, I got to sleep in the car. It'd be like my friends would go, we'd hang out, and then we'd wrestle hard. So it was a cool trip. It was cool trips for me, and that was, you know, what we did. And then I think that that was important for my development. But on this flip side, you know, sometimes when you're a little kid, you lose matches because you got headlocked and pinned. And my dad's like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe, you know, some kid hit a stomach on you, or you get headlocked, or you're whatever it is, you know, and so that's all part of the learning curve. But, you know, I think the biggest thing was I got significantly better year by year, and, you know, that made a difference. So maybe I wasn't great when I was 9, I was pretty good when I was 10, you know, I was good when I was 11, I was really good when I was 12, you know what I mean? And that was kind of the way my development went.
Jody Stripmatter, I was with him this summer, and he was talking about you wrestling Spencer Lee, and you would go to a tournament, and he'd be in your bracket, and you two would wrestle, and then 30 minutes later, you'd ask him for an exhibition, and then another one, and another one. And he'd get tired of coaching against you because you guys must have wrestled a bunch of times, is what he said.
Well, so, I mean, maybe. To my memory, Spencer and I have wrestled twice, but I might be wrong. So one time was a Greco match when I was in, like, 7th grade, and I got text-balled in Greco. It was, like, my first Greco tournament, and he was, like, good. I remember it was like the old rules when it was a 7-point tech fall, and I got like put down, or I got taken down somehow and then gutted because I didn't have any parterre defense and I lost. The funnier story though, we wrestled when I was like 10 years old, and I don't even know if they remember this because I wasn't that good. But my dad knew Spencer was a youth superstar. He was so good in youth wrestling. And my dad's like, I want you to wrestle him. So we're going to go. He used to live in Sagerstown, and he's like, we're going to the Sagerstown tournament. And I went there, and it was in this tight, packed gym. My mom hated it. She's like, it's so hot. I'm sweating. It was just, like, a miserable weekend. And all this, like, all the other kids weren't that good. I, like, pinned my way through the tournament. My dad's like, all right, at least we got this match with Spencer. I wrestled him in the finals, takedown, double armbar, and pinned in, like, 15 seconds. Wow. Walk off the mat. I was, like, I was all sad, but at the same time, like, wow, I got pinned in 10 seconds or whatever. And my dad's like, you suck. Like, I can't believe we wasted all this time for you to get pinned in freaking 20 seconds. So that's just a funny little story about, you know, me and Spencer when we were kids. I only remember because I'll never forget my mom honestly likes telling the story because she's like, that was such a miserable, like, trip just for this one match. You got pinned in a minute. It was like, what the heck?
That's funny. So you really made a name for yourself your eighth grade year at Super 32 and then your high school season at Hilton that year. Was that something that you felt was coming in you, or something that just kind of hit you, you really caught it?
So my dad had like pretty high expectations for me, you know, my whole life. I remember it was the 2010 or 11 World Championships, and Asgharov wrestled Viktor Lebedev in the final. And Asgharov lost, but he was 18 years old. And I remember my dad pointed at the TV, and he's like, you know, he was 18. He made the World Finals. He's like, you could do that too if you worked hard. And, you know, why not try and do it? So in my brain, I was like, I'm trying to make the World Finals at 18. You know, I didn't understand, you know, how far I was from that, but that was my thing. So in eighth grade, and along with that, I just expected to just, you know, my inherent competitiveness, I think, just as in my personality, you know, I expected to win the tournaments I was at. So if I was going to Super 32, I was going to win the tournament. If I was going to the high school state tournament, I was going to win the tournament. So I don't want to come off as arrogant, but it was just, my dad always said, he's like, why would you ever go to a tournament if you didn't, you know, expect to win, you know?
Right.
Why not prepare to win? Why be unprepared because you don't think you're good enough? You know, I mean, if you don't think you're good enough, then that's your fault because you didn't train the right way to get better at wrestling. So, you know, I mean, I'm not going to say that I expected, you know, to win everything and blah, 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 but I did just kind of blissful, like ignorantly, where it was, right. You know, in my brain, it was like, if I'm here, it's because I'm here to win the tournament. So that was kind of my approach to, you know, everything. It still is, honestly.
That makes a lot of sense. So moving on into your kind of recruiting stage, were you totally set on Cornell all the way, or were there other schools that you were looking at?
I, to be honest, didn't even really think about going anywhere else. You know, I love being at Cornell, and, you know, it's close to home, but it's far enough where I could kind of, you know, start learning to be independent. And, you know, I had met the coaches just kind of by going to matches, and I don't know, it's close to home. It's the nearest college, you know, to me with a successful D1 program. So it was just, you know, something I was around, and it was a great school. So I knew if anything ever didn't work out with wrestling, I'd still have, you know, an opportunity to have a good future.
Right.
So, it was kind of a no brainer for me, honestly. I knew that was where I wanted to be. So I committed really early too.
Did you wrestle with Finger Lakes?
Yeah, I trained at the RTC more after I committed because, you know, so I committed in October or November of my sophomore year. I think November of my sophomore year. I wrestled 120, so even then I was still a little small. But the year before that, I was a 106-pounder, so I was definitely too small to be around there. But, you know, I had known the coaches, so I think after I committed, you know, once, especially, I remember, like, spring of my sophomore year, I was going there, you know, probably once a week and training with the guys and, you know, going to the RTC. And that, I think, helped me a lot.
Yeah. So what do you think was special? You mentioned the grades being close to you, but what else do you think was special to you about Cornell? Coaching staff, community partners, proximity to Hilton where you grew up, or all of the above?
So I think, honestly, one thing that, you know, people don't talk about that I thought was really valuable. So when I was being recruited, the staff was Coach Cole, Mike, Damian, and Donnie, and now it's Cole, Mike, Kyle, Gabe.
Mm-hmm.
Cole, Mike, Gray, Kyle, Day, Gabe, Dean.
Right, right, right.
Whatever the order is. And it's the same thing with our staff now. If you look, they have a very varied, so they have a wide variety of skills that they can present to you. And I think that was something that I was looking for in a program. Like, I did not want to go to a program that had a style because I don't really have that much of a style. If you look at I'm pretty adaptable, and, you know, I'll wrestle different match to match to match depending on how good my opponent is in certain positions and where their flaws are. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I wanted to be at a program that was equally as adaptable. And if you look at, you know, Kyle has got this phenomenal leg defense. He's super explosive. He's got great, you know, high crotch stuff. And, you know, that's his thing. And Mike, you know, he was super tough. He was always really well conditioned, and his guys are in great shape, and he's got really good single leg stuff. And Gabe was always really strong. You know, he's great with big guys, and, you know, he's a good recruiter. He's a good, like, friend at coach to have, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. And then Coach Cole was the most awkward guy to wrestle back in the day. He was, like, weird and awkward before that was a thing people did. So that was one thing that really caught my eye about the program was I knew that if I went there, I wouldn't have a style. I wouldn't wrestle like a Cornell guy. Think about it. No one says, oh, that's a Cornell guy. You know what I mean? Yeah. They do a great job adapting to how we wrestle and teaching our guys to wrestle the best their way, which is something that I really appreciated.
Yeah, I've never really thought about that. But now you say it, that definitely is true. I can't say there's one style at Cornell through the years. Did it take you a while to adjust to the college lifestyle, not only in wrestling, but obviously the Ivy League academics was pretty tough?
You know, it's funny, everyone says it. So the hardest semester, I don't know if this is true about everywhere, but oh, you'll see. It's first semester of freshman year. It's tough, you know, it's your first time on your own, and it's not even that the school is that much harder. I mean, it's definitely way harder than the public school that I went to, obviously. But, you know, you're living on your own. You wake up in the morning and you make your own breakfast. You do your own laundry. You drive yourself to school. And, you know, you come home and it's just you and your friends. There's no, like, hey, Mom, like, what are we doing today? It's like, no, you're doing whatever you do today. And, you know, you have to be a lot more independent. So, you know, fortunately, my parents did a good job kind of working me into it where it wasn't just like they dropped me and I had no, you know, life skills. But that transition was, I think it's tough for everybody too. You know, I mean, it's tough, you know, your first time away from home, you know, especially if you didn't go to a prep school, it's literally your first time away from home. And, you know, but I mean, I adjusted quickly and it wasn't like it was hard for me. It's just, you gotta create new habits. You gotta you develop a new routine really is what it is, you know? Right. And I think that developing that new routine was something that took some time, you know, like anything does.
So you not redshirting your freshman year was a pretty big decision. Was that something that was planned all along, or how did that come about? And was it the coach's decision, or was that you saying, no, I'm ready to wrestle right away?
It's a funny story. I couldn't tell you exactly when this phone call happened, but I remember being in class, and Coach Cole texted me, and he's like, hey, call me for 5 minutes. I got to talk to you. And I'm like, hey, I'm in class right now. He's like, give me a minute. I'm like, okay. Now I'm interested. You know what I mean? Call him.
Right.
I call him. I was like a junior or senior, so it's like, you just call me. Call him. I'm like, hey, I got to go to the bathroom or whatever to one of my teachers. Call him. And he's like, hey, you know, because originally the plan was for me to redshirt. They're like, yeah, you know, we're going to get you stronger, give you your training, you're going to redshirt. And then Coach Cole called me. He's like, hey, you're going to be ready to win your freshman year. And I was like, seriously? And he's like, 100%. He's like, I don't know if you believe me or not, but believe me on this. He's like, you know, I see it. He's like, you're going to be ready. Trust me. And I'm like, okay. You know, like I would never doubt them for a second. Like, I obviously, it's in their best interest and my best interest for me to win. So
right.
If they think I can win, it's because they really think I can win. So I was like, hey, if you really think I'm ready, then let's go. I'm ready. And he was just like, yeah. So be ready to go your freshman year. He's like, he said something in perfect Coach Cole fashion along the lines of like, yeah, be ready to go. I hope you win. I was like, yeah, me too, Coach. What the heck? So, you know, I'll never forget that conversation because it was just so matter of fact. He's like, yeah, you're going to win the tournament. So, you know, I'll see you when you get here.
He just called you and told you that you're good enough to win your freshman year, no red shirt needed. And you're like, okay.
I was
and
like, all right, let's do it then.
No red shirt at all. That's funny.
He was right.
And he was right. Yeah. Your freshman year, you took a loss to Jaden Ironman. Yep. What are some things that you attribute that loss to?
So this is another really funny story. So I did not wrestle poorly in the Ironman match, but I definitely didn't wrestle smart. So I'm beating him 5-3, but I also have riding time, and it's locked up. So it's effectively 6-3 in the third period. There's 30 seconds to go. You watch a lot of wrestling, right?
Right.
What is Jaden Ironman's best skill?
He didn't really have a best skill. He's just pretty crazy all over the board, I'd say.
I would say scoring off your shots to his lead leg.
Your shots,
That's like his MO. It's like, grab his leg. Right. So I'm like, and I'm a stupid freshman who's like starting to feel the pressure a little bit. I'm wrestling, you know, and, you know, people are screaming and yelling, and I dive at his leg for no reason. Get cradled to my back, and I lose 9-6. And I was like, I can't believe that has happened. I was so out of it after that because It's like it's one thing to lose to somebody who just beat you the whole time. Mm-hmm. But it was just in my head. I'm like, I can't believe I did something that stupid with such short time left in the match.
Right.
And but it was good for me. It was like kicking the butt. And I trained after that. So I don't know if every program does this, but during like the between session time at school, we call it intersession. Mm-hmm. We do two a days. This is what we call it. So we just do a morning lift technique or sprint workout, and then an afternoon hard workout. And inherently, again, just talking about kind of how my personality is, coming off that loss, worked really hard during that intercession period. Because it was like, it was just, I couldn't redeem myself. It was the last match of the tournament, and I wasn't going to compete again until the Lehigh duel, which was, you know, the end of January. So now I'm just sitting here. I'm on a one-match losing streak. And I was just like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe. So because of that, you know, I remember Mike sat me down, and he's like, listen, you know, you can't beat yourself up over this. You all you can do is just put it behind you and keep improving. And, you know, that was what I was able to do. And I think I made a really big jump my freshman year after that because, again, I think just kind of part of who I am, I respond really well to adversity, to losing matches, because it's a kickstart to, you know, increase your work output. And that, you know, losing that Ironman match, I think, made a big difference for me. You know, short term, it was like, what the heck? And long term, it was something that I think really helped me a lot.
So, when's Cornell going to come back to the Southern Scuffle? You said you had a long break. You didn't wrestle until the end of January. Cornell should bring it back to the Southern Scuffle.
I know. We actually had some of our Frogs, the redshirt guys, wrestle at the Scuffle this week.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure. Coach Cole set up at South Beach Duels in December.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't quote me on that, but I'm pretty sure he had something to do with setting that up. So I think we'll be going to that a lot. But I won't be going to any college tournaments this this season. I'll be training freestyle. So I mean, hopefully, I remember actually. This is a funny story about you guys. I remember being at the Southern Scuffle when I wasn't there. We were in Florida, and I'm watching the live stream, and I watch the match, and I get on like Twitter or something, and someone's like, "Man, this little kid on the call is awesome," and I'm like, "What are you talking about?" And I'm looking through, and someone's like, "Please listen to Matt 25 or whatever it was right now."
Right.
I scroll over there, and Kylie, Mike's wife, Kylie Gray, was like, "This little kid is freaking awesome," and it's so funny because I'm, you know, I ran into you guys at Final X, and now I'm talking on the phone. So
right.
Yeah, that was really funny.
That's pretty cool. So against Ironman ever since, I don't believe you've ever lost to him since then. What? Do you just wrestle smarter, not take dive bomb shots with 30 seconds to go, or what are some things that you've changed wrestling him?
You know, I think something that helps for me is talking about making adjustments. I the biggest thing, you know, is just for me is just taking clean attacks, and it's not just for wrestling. You know, Iron, it's for wrestling anybody. Taking clean attacks and finishing quickly is one of the biggest things that separate good wrestlers from great wrestlers. So it's something that, you know, continuously has been something that we work on. It's still something we work on. It's the first thing my dad said to me when I walked off the mat in Poland this weekend was that you got to finish quicker. So, you know, I think that that's a big trend in my wrestling is working on finish quickly. Mm-hmm. And I think that just translated to, you know, like the development of my wrestling.
That makes sense. So moving forward to your NCAA tournament in 2018, you had arguably the toughest road. Could you walk me through that weekend, talking about your mindset into each match and then how you were able to push through practically without a knee?
So in the quarterfinals, I had Dean Heil. And I remember when the brackets came out, like some people get really into their draw and, you know, all invested in it. And I remember I was like, you know, it is what it is. You know, again, if the goal is to win, you should just expect to be better than everybody you wrestle. So your draw only matters which guys you have to wrestle to get there, in my opinion. And I remember my guys that I had in the first two rounds, I had already wrestled during the season. And I was pretty confident I'd have Ironman in the semis. So in my brain, I'm just like, all right, Dean Heil's the only guy who I'm going to wrestle this weekend that I haven't wrestled before.
Right.
At least until the finals. I don't know. I didn't know who was going to come out of the other side, you know.
Yeah, that one was That was pretty close. But you ended up wrestling him before, I think.
Meredith before. So Hyatt was the only guy who I hadn't wrestled during the season. But you know, I just remember Dean Hyatt was the man all year. He won 2 national titles, and I was still in high school. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, he had like an up and down kind of year. And then I remember, you know, getting ready for that match, and Mike Gray was just kind of in my ear, and he's like, listen, it does not matter who beat this guy. It's the national tournament. You're going to get the best version of everybody you wrestle. So be ready to go. And I'm like, okay. And, you know, a minute into the match, we get in a scramble. I'm rubber knee, and I try to square up to him as I'm doing it, and my knee gets really hot, and I get a kind of, you know, tearing sensation, and I was like, uh-oh, that did not feel good. And I remember I get up, and my knee kind of buckles on the way up. And I'm like, ooh, dude, I'm being a baby. There's no way I just got hurt right now. I just didn't even think it was possible. So I kind of walk it off, get back on the line, and, you know, I get through that match, and this is a funny story. So I kind of like jump up and I hug my coach, and he picks me up off the ground. And then if you look at, there's a moment where he's just like holding me off the ground, and my knees are like up in my chest, right? And he's like, what are you doing? I'm like, don't put me down. Like, my knee hurts really bad. Mm-hmm. And he's telling me, okay, you know, we're going to go to the back and have the trainer look at it. He's like, I'm putting you down though, so get ready to put weight on it. And he puts me down slowly. I start walking. I do a little interview, walk back to the training room, and our trainer is awesome for this. He does his little checks, and he immediately realizes I tore my ACL. He does one thing, puts my knee down, and he's like, ooh, that was not good. And there's this moment where we're both looking at each other, and he's trying to figure out if he wants to tell me or not. Mm-hmm. And I was like, don't tell me. He's like, are you sure? I'm like, I don't want to know. Just don't tell me. You're not going to make me not wrestle, so I'd rather just not know. Yeah. He's like, okay. And then, you know, that was it. I, you know, take Advil, tape it up, ice it the whole weekend, the whole deal, and, you know, the biggest thing was that, you know, Mike had said it to me the whole weekend. Your knee hurts, you know, you don't feel good, whatever it is. You can't complain about it. You can't change it. You just have to accept it. This is your new reality. You know, take it or leave it. So that was kind of my approach to the whole situation, was that I couldn't change anything about it. You know, if I didn't like it, sucks to suck. You got to deal with it. So that was kind of how I took it.
So then in the semifinals, you hit Ironman. Who you had just lost to. I don't believe you had wrestled him since the loss. Is that correct?
No. That was the first time wrestling him since Florida.
So what was the mindset going into that match?
It was like double. You know what I mean? It was the one guy who had beat me this year, so it was that kind of redemption match for me. But it was also the national semifinals. It was, you know, the biggest stage I had wrestled on in my whole life. So, you know, it was really exciting. It was exciting. And, you know, it was an electrifying environment, and, you know, it was a really exciting match. You know, it's kind of back and forth. And, you know, thankfully I pulled that one out. And then, it was good. That was an exciting one. That was one where I remember, like, coming up to Mike, and I was like, I'm glad I got that one back. You know what I mean? Because it was just, yeah. But it was good. Yeah. It was kind of everything coming full cylinder, like working on finishing a little bit better, cleaning up my leg attacks. And just, it was a good sign that I was getting better at wrestling. You know what I mean? And that was what I was looking for.
Do you think your knee hindered your wrestling at all? Or did it even bother you?
Yeah, 100%. I remember it was worse than the finals, but that was also the worst it hurt, if that makes sense. I remember in the finals, I couldn't really shoot. So for the NCAAs, what a lot of guys, at least what we do, is we'll come in around 1 or 2 o'clock and do a hard drill and a match. Just, like, get that first match out of you, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I couldn't even really get in a stance. I couldn't bend my knees past 90 degrees. I couldn't touch my knee to the ground. So I was in pretty rough shape, you know, coming into that day. And if you look at the finals, I don't really take any shots. I just kind of fall and reach.
Right.
And just same thing, you know, adrenaline's a great – I say it all the time. Adrenaline's the best pain blocker you can get. So you got wrestling the national finals, it's like, I don't care if my leg's falling off. Like, let's go. I'm ready to wrestle. And so I kind of got through that one and, you know, figured out and, you know, fortunately was able to take advantage of some of the other things that I do well and, you know, got through that match.
When did you figure out you had a torn ACL and MCL, right?
Just ACL and a little bit of meniscus.
Okay. Like, okay.
Maybe 10%. I remember coming off the mat. My dad, they stuck my dad kind of down there, and he comes over and hugs me or whatever, and we're going up, and Coach Cole had told some of the alumni that are in our box. You know, each section gets, like, box seats?
Right, yes.
So he told some of those alumni, just kind of, you know, walking up. He walked up there before I was like, hey, just tore his ACL. Like, in the quarterfinals. That was what he did.
Oh.
But they didn't tell me yet because.
You said.
Well, I told them not to. And then there wasn't really a good time because no one wanted to be the guy to be like, hey, you tore your knee out. Right after I won NCAAs, you know what I mean? I go up there and these guys are like, man, what you did with your knee, that's awesome. Like, oh, I can't believe you did that, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, what? What are you talking about? I'm like, oh, whatever. I just kind of dismiss it. And then one guy goes, I can't believe you did all that with a torn ACL. And I look at Coach Cole, I'm like, what did he just say? He's like, I'll tell you about it. He kind of laughs. Oh, like, I'll tell you about it in a second. And he's like, yeah, you tore your ACL wrestling Heil. Like, Chris Scarlatta, our trainer, he's like, Scarlatta said he thinks you tore it. And I'm like, oh my, you're lying. Like, no way. Because in my brain, like, Brian Robito tore his ACL. And he, like, couldn't walk. I didn't know he tore ACL and MCL. And he blew his knee out. But I'm like, dude, he tore his ACL. He couldn't even walk. What do you mean I wrestled a lot? And, got an MRI. And they're like, yeah, you have no ACL left. You totally, completely tore it out. You know, you're going to have to get a graft and totally get it, you know, repaired.
Oh, my.
And I was like, oh, you don't say.
And did you want to wrestle freestyle, like, prior to the NCAA tournament? I'm sure you had given some thought to that freestyle season. Were you planning to go junior or senior?
Senior.
You were planning to go senior. And yeah. And when did that thought come into your mind? How soon was, I can't wrestle that this summer. I won't be able to.
I remember sitting in the doctor's office, and the surgeon comes in there, and she's like, hey, like, you know, it was funny how she brought it up to me, because I'm a college kid. She's like, hey, like, could your parents afford a knee surgery? And I'm like, excuse me? She's talking to me. She goes, yeah, you know, you completely tore your ACL. We're going to have to graft it, you know, out of your patella, your hamstring. And, you know, it's going to be a couple months. You know, it's going to be a pretty long recovery, but, you know, you're going to be fine. You know, it's like, don't freak out. You know, it's not how it used to be, you know, when your career ended because you tore your ACL. It's going to be totally different. Wow. I'm like, okay. So she's like, you're going to be fine. But it's going to be a process. And I was just sitting there. And it didn't really click until I get home and I'm talking about the U.S. Open. And I'm like, no, I'm not wrestling in that.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, so much for that. But, I mean, it was unfortunate. But at the same time, I would have taken the NCAA title for it. Only because... you know, it was already torn, so it's like, might as well just finish out the tournament.
Right.
And then whatever happens, happens, you know. So it was unfortunate, but it wasn't, you know, devastating. It wasn't, like, it broke my heart. It was just, you know, it was an unfortunate situation to find myself in.
You've got a lot more of those U.S. Opens, I'm sure.
Yeah, fortunately. Hopefully.
Yeah. So how would you compare, just on general, your freshman season to your sophomore season?
So my freshman year, everything was pretty new. You know, everything was like a surprise. It was a new thing. And I was like, oh, what's this? Oh, what's this? Oh, you know. And then my sophomore year, also too, it was tough, honestly. My sophomore year was really hard because I'm coming off knee surgery. You know, I'm working my way back into that. I was really heavy. You know, I was really heavy and, you know, it was tough getting back, you know, getting my timing back, getting my strength back and, you know, managing my weight and everything. And,
right.
But at the same time, it was, you know, every match got a little bit better. I got a little better at it. And, you know, it set me up really well for the freestyle season because I had to, you know, I had to deal with some adversity and, you know, it was kind of a tough process, but it, you know, I got used to just having to make do with what I was wrestling with and every match got better. You know what I mean? So I was on the incline going through the season.
What were the, like you mentioned, those adversities helped you to the U.S. Open. What were some changes you had to make going into the 2019 U.S. Open from your, sophomore season?
So, I had to work on developing my leg attacks because, in all honesty, during the year, just because of my knee, and again, my knee and the weight cut were a big thing. So I just, you know, part of that's my fault. I was too heavy coming back from knee surgery. But because of that, I developed a lot of really bad habits from just wrestling the whole year. And, you know, we had talked about it, and Mike was like, you can't wrestle like this. You know, you have to, you got to change something. You got to work on what you're doing. And, you know, we spent a lot of time fixing my single leg, fixing my high crotch, and just developing my offense again. You know, I mean, getting back to attack, and guys off my legs. And if you look at how I wrestled, you know, at the NCAA tournament versus the U.S. Open, it was extremely different. And the reason I had to think about it so much was because, honestly, we worked on a lot of stuff. Like, pretty much we sat down and we just went, you know, all right, clean slate. You got to change a lot with how you wrestle. You're not going to win if you wrestle like this. And, you know, fortunately, I had the time, and I made the adjustments that I had to win the Open, and, you know, but still. Well, I remember walking off the mat and still like, all right, we're really happy with this, but it's got to be better. And I think that was something that helped me a lot just with my development.
How often did you wrestle with Jordan Oliver in prior to the U.S. Open, like during your season or something? Obviously, as the U.S. Open came close, I'm sure you guys stopped wrestling with each other a little bit.
Yeah, honestly, Jordan helped me a ton my freshman year. So much my freshman year. You know, he's always going to work with me, and, you know, he liked helping me, and we had a good relationship. And then even this year, you know, we'd wrestle, you know, maybe once a week, something like that, at the RTC practice. And, you know, it was good. He's a good partner, and he was always able to challenge me. He was always able to push me, and it was someone who I knew whenever I went with him, it was going to be a scrap for me. You know what I mean? And, you know, that's something that was really important for me, was getting that feel. And then, you know, obviously, as we got closer, we didn't train together as much, just because, you know, you don't want to make it weird. But one thing I'll say that I don't think it's talked about as much, it was never weird between Jordan and I. You know what I mean? He did what he had to do, and I did what I had to do. And we literally had a conversation about it. He sat me down, and he's like, listen, you know, we're going to wrestle. Winner's going to win, loser's going to lose, and that's it, you know. We're going to be friends, we're going to wrestle, and then we're going to be friends. So whatever happens. And, you know, I really appreciate that from him. You know what I mean? Like, that maturity.
Well, moving into the U.S. Open, you had to wrestle Nick Dardane's first round, right?
I had him in the round of 16, yeah.
And then
so scrappy, I remember.
That match was crazy. But then you had Frank Molinaro, 2016 Olympian, fifth place. Then Jordan Oliver, and then Zane Rutherford. How were you able to what were some mental or tactical approaches to winning that event, and how were you able to overcome those challenges?
So tactically, there wasn't a ton of adjustments that we were working on. It was just little things, like, all right, be ready for the high cross, you know, be ready, he's gonna be strong, stuff like that. But the biggest thing was, you know, I guess I remember, here's the best way I can explain it. I remember having a conversation with my dad, you know, maybe a week or two before the U.S. Open. He called me, and he's like, listen, you know, like, wrestle your hardest. Whatever's going to happen is going to happen. And, you know, you're going to wrestle great. And, you know, like, there's pretty much just kind of, you know, like, oh, you know, there's still time, you know, between now and the, you know, World Trials to keep getting better.
Right.
And I was like, forget about that. I'm trying to win right now. And he's like, really? You think you're going to win? I'm like, yeah, I really do. He's like, all right, well, go win the tournament, I guess. And it was just funny because I wrestled not to my best during the season, right? And then coming into the Open, for me, it was my chance. I felt great. It was the best I'd felt, you know, since before I tore my ACL my freshman year, you know, not even comparable. So for me, it's like, this was my opportunity to feel good. And it was so exciting. I felt like no one could beat me, honestly. And obviously, I was that's not the case. I am not unbeatable by any means. But I felt great. And going into those matches, I was super confident in myself. And I think that made a big difference because I wasn't wrestling the matches, all right, you know, let's try and pull an upset. In my brain, it was like, I'm better than this guy.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. So
and I think that was a big difference for me.
Yeah. What? Looking into the tournament, when I was I was thinking about who I was going to pick to win it. I was torn because I felt like your style matched really well for freestyle. But then because of the season and your really close match with Joey McKenna, I wasn't confident in picking you. And I picked Zane over Jordan Oliver in the finals, and then you took third. But one of my biggest reasons was the strength factor. I thought that Zane and Jordan were going to be able to muscle you, and you weren't going to be able to get off a lot of your attacks. How do you think you were able to overcome that strength deficit, or do you feel like you had any at all?
Honestly, so a big thing, this goes all the way back to, my dad coaching me when I was a little kid. He this is something I never slow. I thought this was really funny when I said this in an interview. But my dad's whole thing was, you can be slower, weaker, not as powerful, the whole deal, but you're going to be better than the guy, and that's why you're going to beat him. So in my brain, that strength factor didn't make a huge difference, only because I feel like I don't depend on my strength that much. A lot of times when I'm moving guys or I'm pulling, like doing whatever I do, it's based on my positioning or, me putting you in such a position that it makes you weaker.
Right.
So with those senior-level guys, I mean, don't get me wrong, they are really strong. But I think part of the reason I was able to have that success, even though they might be stronger than me, is that I was able to attack them in such a way that I put them in compromised positions, or I put myself in such a better position that it overcame that strength gap.
Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Yeah. Moving forward to the next Monday, you had beat the streets against the number one ranked wrestler in the world, Bajrang Poonia. First of all, when did Beat the Streets reach out to you about involving you in their Grapple in the Garden event?
So I remember the night of the NCAA finals, like after I had wrestled, I don't know who contacted Coach Cole. I think it was Coach Cole. But they were like, hey, we got Bajrang. He's going to be in the United States during Beat the Streets. Would Yanni be interested in wrestling him?
Wow. And
Coach Cole, knowing my answer, was like, is that even a question? Make that match happen. Like, we're in. Like, it's going to be the week after the U.S. Open. Is that a problem? We were like, make it happen. He told me, he's like, hey, I got you a match with Bajrang at Beat the Streets. And I was so excited. I mean, this is awesome. I'm going to wrestle literally the returning world silver medalist. Like, that was real. Because I had never wrestled anyone who medaled the world championships before, you know what I mean? And it was an awesome opportunity for me. So I was super excited about that. And, that was something great for me to have this early in my senior level career.
Do you feel like just after a little over a week after competing and winning one of the toughest U.S. Open brackets ever, you returned to New York, wrestled the number one ranked wrestler in the world at your weight. Do you feel like that made a difference that you had just wrestled a meat grinder of a tournament, or were you fresh and ready to go again?
I mean, I definitely believe that it made a difference, but the best way that I think that I thought about it was that, honestly, for me, if I have 2 or 3 days off, that's really all you need. You know what I mean? So right. I wrestled the Open, I think it was Saturday, Sunday. Took Monday off, light day on Tuesday, and then we're back to it. And that's honestly what I would have done had I not had Bajrang in a week. You know what I mean? So,
right.
I mean, I think it definitely made a difference. And, I couldn't really prepare for the match. I kind of just had to show up and wrestle it. But, it is what it is. You got to live with stuff like that. And, part of it too was I don't want to sound like a 10-year-old kid. I was so excited for the match. I was like, I don't care. I'll wrestle him whenever. Like, this is huge for me. This is an awesome opportunity. I have to take advantage of this. So that was kind of my approach to it.
Something I noticed in your match at Beat the Streets with Bajrang is your shooting frequency was much, much higher than the U.S. Open. Was that something you felt you needed to change from the U.S. Open to Beat the Streets, or did it just come naturally against Bajrang that he wasn't able to down block, or you were killing him in the hand fight or something like that?
So it's a little bit of both. Part of it is he does leave his legs open a little bit, but still talking about what we were working on from the national tournament, still they're like, you got to be able to attack legs. All we worked on, attack legs, attack legs, attack legs, attack, 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 shot, shot, shot. And that translated, I think, to the Beat the Streets match. We're still, all week, we're working on getting the legs, getting the legs, getting the legs. And since Bajrang, not that his hands defense is bad. By no means is it bad. He's got great head hands. But he is willing to let guys in on his legs a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that translated to me just shooting the whole match, you know what I mean? And it maybe wasn't tactically the best idea for me, but that was what I was working on. I was getting the legs and wrestling those positions. So that was what I did. You know, I was like, just keep attacking them, keep shooting. That's what we had been working on. So I think part of it was that trajectory that we'd been working on from NCAAs in March, where I hadn't been shooting the whole year, and we had to get back to that. So that's all we worked on, attacking legs.
That makes sense. Well, he had that great chest wrap, and when you kept shooting, I was watching. I was like, oh, no. I hope Yanni can finish these. But luckily, you were able to finish a lot of your shots, and then you got a lace, and you almost got a cradle off of one of his chest wraps. I was having flashbacks to your freshman year finals.
Yeah. He is so – now, talking about the strength difference, mm-hmm. he is really, really strong. I was like, wow, this is a strong dude. I understand how he makes everybody tired, you know what I mean? And, you know, but it was an interesting match because, again, kind of like what I was saying, you can tell when someone, like, people that haven't wrestled in the States wrestle very different than Americans do. And he was definitely more similar than, you know, a Russian.
Right.
But still, you can tell, you know, he's got his good chest wrap, he's strong on the legs, and he's got good positioning. You know, he's got a lot of similar qualities to the American style. But he had a really good chest wrap. And that was kind of like, it was good because it exposed more problems that we didn't know about. You know what I mean?
Right.
It exposed my inability to finish well or my vulnerability in chest wrap. And because of that, you know, we went back and we worked on finishing low single, finishing beating chest wrap, finishing through legs quickly. So this is what I think is really important for me is when I wrestle guys, it gives me new things to work on, and it really makes a big difference for me. I think that helps my development a ton, is being able to make those adjustments, or being forced to make those adjustments.
Right. So he has a very high pace, and Zane Rutherford has a very high pace. They're both really heavy on the head and very strong. Who would you say made you more tired in the 6-minute match?
So, to be honest, Bajrang, but there's more to that. So Zane's pace is honestly because he's peppering you with head taps and he's faking, he's moving his feet, peppering head, blah, 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 blah. And you know, there's that aspect. Whereas Bajrang, when you wrestle him, the best way I can explain it is like someone's holding their hand over your mouth, and then every time you move, their hand comes back. So he's just constantly on your head, pull, push, and as soon as you get him off, right back on, he's like glued to you. You know what I mean? So I think part of it too, some people might tell you Zane wrestles harder. It's just what you're more accustomed to. You know, I'm used to wrestling guys that move their hands, move their feet, attack, level change, the whole deal. So I think that I was a little more adjusted for that. Whereas I've never wrestled anyone whose hands are that heavy like Bajrang's were. I think that you know, probably attributed to why he does so well at the senior level is I think a lot of people have just never felt that before.
Didn't you train with Bajrang a little after that at the NYC RTC? Or when was that that you trained?
Yep. So not literally the day after, but the week after Beat the Streets. I was down there Monday and Tuesday. Came back to Ithaca for a couple of days, and I was there Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday after that. So I had a net total 5 days with him. And it was awesome. You know, he's actually a really nice guy. And his coach was great. You know, they were helping me a lot, and you know, we were helping him out. So, and he loved training with me, and I loved training with him. So it was really good for me, and it made a really big difference. You know, getting used to working at that pace, you know, for days in a row, multiple workouts a day.
Do you normally go to the NYC RTC, or was that just for him?
That was
you
just
knew
for
he was going to be there.
I think Valentine Kalika. I think Valentine set that up. Because I knew Valentine from when Helen Merlis was wrestling for him, you know, in 2016 and 2015. Valentine had to train with Helen sometimes. Yep, Pico. But I was little. I was 100. I was like a 54, 58 kilo guy. And I remember Valentine having to train with Helen sometimes. And I knew that because of it. So he was like, hey, you know, I want to get you down here training with Bajrang. Kendall Cross had brought it up too because they were all beat the streets. It's right by, you know, where they're from. So they set that up, and I was more than willing to do that. I was like, yeah, you mean I'm training with this guy? Let's do it.
Was Bajrang cool with you after Beat the Streets?
Yeah, definitely. It's funny. He's he's like my friend on WhatsApp. I talk to him sometimes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like there's it's not like oh I hate this guy because he beat me. You know what I mean? It's just I beat him in a match, and you know he was upset with himself because he lost. It wasn't like he hated me for beating him. You know what
right.
I mean?
Right. Yeah. So I want to get into the situation with Zane from Final X, but I don't want to spend too much time here because I feel like it's been talked about for a while. So what I know is that there was a controversy at the end of the second match about challenging 50 seconds late when the rule is 5 seconds. And so your Cornell camp submitted a protest to the Olympic Committee, I believe, which had set an arbitration date of July 29th. And they're currently deciding what the outcome will be. And they're hoping that August 8th will be a date where they'll make a decision.
So August 8th is going to be like the hearing. So literally tomorrow I'm going to put on a suit and tie and sit in a room somewhere. And I'm going to have like this video kind of, I'm not 100% sure how it's going to go down, but it would be me, Coach Cole, my lawyer, Zane. He has a coach with him. I'm not sure who, and his lawyer, and then an arbitrator. And, you know, the arbitrators ask questions. The lawyers are going to ask questions. They're going to talk. They're going to ask Zane and I questions. They're going to ask the coaches questions and ask each other questions, you know, the whole deal. And it's going to take as long as they need to take, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
And then hopefully we would know by the following day. So maybe the 9th. Maybe Monday at the latest, but again, I don't know that much about the whole thing, the whole situation. But to my understanding, we're protesting. Well, I know what we're protesting. We're protesting the violation of the 5 second rule and, you know, a couple other things. And then they're trying to say, oh, you know, well, I don't know their argument. I'm going to hear it tomorrow. And then, the lawyer's going to talk, the arbitrator's going to make a decision. And, you know, I'll find out what they decide.
Is it in Ithaca or State College, or where will that be?
So that's what I think what they're going to do so that we don't have to go anywhere is it's going to be this video thing. I don't know how they're going to do it. That's what I'm saying. But so in theory, Zane would be in a room somewhere with just him, his lawyer, and his coach at State College. I'm going to be in a room somewhere with me and my lawyer and Coach Cole in Ithaca. And the arbitrator is going to be wherever the arbitrator is from. And we're going to have this, like, three-way video chat. I'm sure it'll be pretty zoomed out so you can see our whole body. You know what I mean? So we're just going to be talking. Yeah. I know Coach Cole has, you know, we have things that we're going to do and we're going to talk back and forth. And it's really mostly lawyers talking and us just kind of listening, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But we're pretty much going to be in three different locations, to my understanding.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay, so that's kind of – that makes sense to me. I'm glad that – that they're going to decide that soon because we've been waiting since June 8th.
Oh, yeah.
How have the coaches have you been attending the training camps at the Olympic Training Center this summer?
Yeah, I missed the Pan Am camp because of Poland, but I was on the first one.
Is this your first time, or did they have a system like this in place when you're on the cadet team?
Yep, so when I was on the cadet team, I went to the Cadet World Training Camp, and then my second year, they let me go to the Olympic camp, which was really fun, really exciting. Mm-hmm. And then I was at the cadet camp again. So that was, and then I had done one other training camp. So I think that was my fifth or sixth time I'd been there.
How have the national team coaches handled your situation with Zane?
They've been awesome. You know, they've been a really good job. They've been really professional. And, you know, like I talked to Coach Zadik and he'll say, you know, listen, whatever happens with that, you know, I just want you to understand that if you win, you know, we're going to invest in you. And if you don't, we're still going to invest in you. And it's the same for him. And if we're working with him, it's not because we dislike you. And if we're working with you, it's not because we dislike him. You know, and like they've been really good about it. And, you know, I'm just thankful that they've been doing such a good job. And again, there's no bad blood too. Like people try to make it out like it's this big, you know, oh, Yanni's. It's like, yeah, it is what it is. Like,
right.
It's going to happen. And, you know, we're in a wrestle for the ninth time.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is what it is. So, you know, it's not like, it's not as malicious as people make it out to be sometimes. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, so the coaches are kind of training you both as if you're both going to Kazakhstan.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that they would be doing that with all of the number twos and number one. You know what I mean? The way that Coach Zadik explains it, because, like, I want you all to prepare as if you're going to the World Championships, because who knows, you might actually be going. Or,
right.
And the other thing, too, is, at least from my point of view, it's good to get in this groove of training through the summer like I'm competing in the Worlds, because hopefully one day I actually will be. And,
right.
And even if I lose the protest and I don't get to go this year, you know, it's a good habit to get into, because, you know, hopefully I make an Olympic team and I get ready to go to the games, or, you know, whatever year I make a team, if I, you know, hopefully I do someday, then, you know, I've been in this cycle of training through the summer, getting ready for this the whole time. It's not anything new.
Right. Well, in early July, you left for Istanbul, Turkey for the Yasar Dogan. We talked about your trip there. So, just talking about the draws, when you hit Zane first round, what was your reaction right away? Because I kind of knew it was coming. I actually said on our podcast the week before, we were kind of talking about the Dogu, I was like, if I know UWW, Zane Yanni is going to be first round.
Yo, sorry. You and Mike Gray must share a brain.
Did he say that?
I'm sorry, I cut you off there.
No, that's fine. I said, did he say that?
Yeah, I remember the draws were, like, coming out. They're doing the draws. Right as I'm about to start my last workout the day before.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike's like, I bet you get Zane in round one. He's like, if I was the bet man, I'd put $20 on it. I'm like, dude, no way. We're, like, the only Americans. There's only 12 guys in the bracket. Like, how are they going to put Zane in round one? And he's like, dude, crazy stuff like that happens when you're overseas. I bet you guys wrestle in round one.
Right.
And I'm like, no way. Yep, sure is to me. Round one. And,
do they do the draws randomly?
Right in front of the coaches. So what happened, literally, it was I remember the story because I guess Coach Zadik had to go up and click the button. You know, you click the button, it gets you a random number, and that's how you dictate your spot in the bracket.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you know, USA, John Michael Diakmahalis, boop, click the button. USA, Zane Allen Redford, click the button. And literally, I was, like, 48, and Zane was 49, or whatever the numbers were.
That's so funny.
And he was just like, I can't believe I drew them in round one.
Is it totally random, or could they have possibly set it up?
They could have set it up, but theoretically, it's 100% random. If they're honestly not trying to break the rules, it's 100% random.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, oh, here we go. Definitely getting the match, you know? And, it was just funny because I remember, you know, Mike telling me a story and how Coach Zadik's like, all right, like, I'm clicking the button twice. And it was literally, like, our numbers were, like, directly adjacent to each other. You know what I mean? It wasn't even, you know, there's 100 numbers and we were 51 and 52 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, that's definitely round one.
Mm-hmm. That's funny.
Yeah.
Okay. How were you able to change the result of that match so dramatically? Because the first match at Final X, he came in with an amazing game plan and was able to just stop your leg defense and get in on those low doubles over and over again. And then in the second match at Final X, you slowed it down a lot and won the match until after the time was out. And then it was a close match though in the second one. And then at Dogu, you kind of blew it open 9-5 or something like that. 9-3 until the end, I guess.
So,
how do you blow that out?
I mean, I think that kind of it goes in line with, you know, what we've been talking about was, as much as, you know, you game plan for guys and you get ready for what they're going to do, a lot of it was just me, you know, we're working on improving my wrestling. And, you know, my leg attacks got better and my defense got better. And, you know, I can't really attribute it to one adjustment in my game. You know what I mean? I think it was just overall, you know, because, you know, I have, you know, great people around me that, you know, really care about my development as a skilled wrestler. Mm-hmm. We had worked on continuously getting better at wrestling. And I think that kind of translated to, you know, wrestling well in the Dogu because, you know, we were just constantly, we were really critical of me and, you know, not really letting anything fly under the radar. So anything that I was doing wrong, we really quickly would try to address.
Right. Okay. So after you won that match, who did you have right after that one? He was a tough guy. I don't think he was ranked.
From Azerbaijan?
Yes. Yes.
So he was the U23 World Silver Medalist. He lost to Ray Higuchi in the finals, like 5-4. From Azerbaijan. His name's Rahim Zadeh.
Okay. Yes. So that was a tough match. How much time did you have in between your match with Zayn and now?
Maybe 45 minutes to an hour or something like that. Not super long, but not long enough.
Right. Yeah. And then your semifinals against Muzikai, that one was so fun to watch.
That was nuts.
Did you know he had very little conditioning going into the match?
Only because I had seen his quarterfinal match.
Mm-hmm.
And he beat the guy, he tech-followed the guy in like 4 minutes and then was like bent over, tired after the match. And I remember looking at Mike and I was like, is he really that out of shape? And he's like, oh yeah, really out of shape. So
he was watching.
So yeah, we knew he was going to get tired. We didn't know to what extent, but we just knew at some point, if the match went 6 minutes, he was going to be really tired by the end of it. You know what I mean? And we didn't know how long it was going to take or whatever, but we knew he was going to get tired, so.
Yeah.
You know, that was that. And, you know, he's really explosive, really fast, and, you know, he had some really good skills, and then he kind of hit a wall, and fortunately I was able to wrestle through so many of those positions. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that was a big reason he got worn out, was even the points he was scoring were really hard-fought points.
Really hard. I think that
took a lot out of him.
Those were about a minute-long sequences that you guys covered in about 10 seconds.
Yeah, just a lot of motion, a lot of...
For sure.
You know, really crazy.
How much fun was that match for you compared to any normal match you wrestle in the United States? How much fun was being down 9-0 and then ending up coshing him out? But that would have been a tech fall, minus the cautions.
He was really exhausted. It was exciting. It was really dynamic. You know, I've never wrestled anyone who wrestled like that before. Like that much movement and that much, you know, fast switch and changing directions and this and this. And he was picking me up when I was in crackdown. I was sitting on my butt and he picked me up. You know what I mean? It was awesome. You know, it was really fun. It was really exciting. And then, you know, you start coming back. And I remember going to Mike and Buxton at the half. And, you know, they're like, listen, this match is over. And I'm like, really? Because I'm down 9-0. I haven't got tech fault yet. And they're like, no, he's got nothing left. They're like, he's got one hard flurry. If you stop that hard flurry, match is over. He's done. And I'm like, okay. I get to his legs, push him out. He gets to my legs, we get another really, really crazy scramble. I'm like, you know, hairs from being taken down. I swim out of it. We get another scramble, and I take him down, you know, and then the first caution one comes in. And I looked right to the corner, and they're like, that's it. Keep it going, keep it going, keep putting on him. And then, you know, that's really shifted heavily in my favor after that. So, I mean, hey, don't get me wrong. I was getting curb stomped for 3 minutes, and then I turned it around. But, you know, I think... That was honestly a really good learning experience for me, too. You know, you can't get away with a lot wrestling those European guys. They're really good in their positions.
Well, I was honestly surprised with those refs calling it the right way. I was, I feel like normally those overseas refs will not call cautions.
Yeah, that ref was honestly, he was getting really annoyed with him, though, like the whole match, kind of. You can just tell the ref was annoyed with the guy of the entire match because he kept, like, all right, come on, back to the middle. Like, okay, red, you're passive. Okay, attention, red, back to the middle. Red, stand up. Red, get up. You know, constantly getting on him. And I think that, you know, when he hit the wall and, you know, that the first caution happened, he's like, all right, I'm over this guy. Caution one.
That's awesome.
After that, it kind of just snowballed, you know what I mean?
Yeah, we need more of those refs that'll just call cautions.
Yeah, I'm like, hey, I don't mind. Those cautions help me out, you know?
Mm-hmm. So, your Olympic red shirt, we talked about that a little bit. I kind of want to know what that will look like for you. Do you have any events planned that you know you want to go to?
So, a lot of it, not a lot of it, but the early part of this year depends on, you know, how I do in the World Championships, you know, whether or not I'm going to be in the Open, if I make the team, you know, stuff like that. But, right. You know, I'd like to go to the Alliance tournament in early November, you know, in Russia. It's super tough, and, you know, you get a lot of great foreigners there. maybe the Euregan, maybe not, you know, depending on what my coaches think is best for me and how far off the U.S. Open it is. And then again, you know, if I'm the rep, maybe I go to World Cup. You know, maybe I go to the Open if I'm not the rep. Whatever, right. You know, whatever. So, you know, I'm not 100% sure at the moment because I'm a little bit in the dark about this whole situation with the protest, but mm-hmm. I'll have a better answer for you come August 18th, you know, the day after that match.
Yeah. Well, Cornell has a really good team lined up for this next year. Do you think we'll see a lot more red shirts now that you've kind of gone? Do you think a lot of the other guys will redshirt or just you?
You know, it depends a little bit because some of those guys had already taken the gap year. You know, a lot of our guys go to TC3 for the year.
Mm-hmm.
So some of them, if they had redshirted, it'd be a sixth year, technically. I mean, not really because their first year is
right.
Not. Really, it's still 4 years, but some guys, you know, it's another year of training and, you know, some of them might be looking to graduate. Some guys, like, it depends, you know, on how advantageous it is for you. You know, some guys, I think, will benefit from it more than others. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, and in all honesty, it's not really my decision to make. You know, it's up to the coaches and them.
Yeah, and, that makes sense.
You know, I'm not 100% sure, but I definitely think you could see, you 100% could see some guys. I think me, Max Dean, Chaz Tucker, Andy Berryessa, Vito Arruja, and I think that's it, are all eligible for Olympic redshirts. So we have a lot of guys that could take it.
Yes.
So I'm not 100% sure what they're going to do with the lineup. But there's a lot of things that, you know, our coaches have to figure out, but they're gonna get to the bottom of it for sure.
Are you going to get to go to Junior Worlds with Vito?
I won't be able to go because he's in Colorado Springs right now, but he'll wrestle the 12th. So if I flew out there, I wouldn't really – I'd be able to go if I lost – the protest, but it,
now that you're still in it,
I'm not banking on losing. So,
right? Yeah.
So, I won't be able to go, but I'll definitely be up watching him. You know, he's gonna do great out there. I really think he's gonna win the tournament. You know, he's really
sure.
Good, getting a lot better.
Yeah. Well, hey, would that Olympic red shirt give you a year to wrestle with Greg at Cornell?
Yeah. So this way, if he takes his gap year out of high school.
Mm-hmm.
When his gray shirt freshman year, I'll be my red shirt senior year. So we'll have 1 year of overlap, maybe two if he doesn't take the gap year. So that'll be cool to have him around, you know, for a little bit to hang out a little before I have to go and be an adult.
Will you stay at Cornell, you think, after graduation or leave for the OTC or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, obviously you never know, you know, life changes and
right.
things happen really quickly.
Right,
but
right.
You know, I'm really happy with, you know, the situation I have at Cornell. And, you know, I have really great coaches there and I have great partners. So, I mean, as of now, I don't really see a situation that would cause me to leave. But at the same time, you know, 5 years from now, who knows, you know, where I'll be. You know, crazier things have happened. So,
right.
I mean, obviously, I'd love to stay in Ithaca. You know, I love it in Ithaca. Ithaca's home to me. But.
Mm-hmm.
And I have great people here, so I don't really see a situation that would cause me to leave, you know, being something dramatic.
How far is Ithaca from Hilton?
So it's about 2 hours.
About two hours. Okay. Yeah. Well, I've got one more topic to cover before I let you go, and that's about your role to your brother Greg's wrestling career. What are some ways you feel like you've been involved in his wrestling?
So. I mean, my dad kind of modeled our styles similarly and then modeled our styles to be similar. And then obviously we pick up different things and our styles kind of drift away. But I think that one thing that, you know, Greg and I have gotten closer, honestly, since I've gone away to school because we don't see each other as much. So now when we see him, it's like, man, I haven't seen him in forever. And, you know,
right.
We get along really well now. Not that we did it before, but better now. And I think part of it, too, is, you know, as I get older, he starts to see me more as, you know, someone who can actually, like, help him with things. You know what I mean? Well, because when you're a little kid, you're like, oh, I don't want to listen to my older brother. Like, what's he know? And then, you know, not forever, but I think he, you know, he sees me as someone who can help him. And, you know, we have a great relationship. So, you know, whatever. So, I mean, you know, I can't say I played a huge role in it because of how much my dad does for us and how much he's helped us. But he knows I'm always there for him if he ever needed me, and he knows he could ask me for help whenever, and he does. He does ask me, he does talk, and he understands that. So right. We have a good relationship, and I'm really excited to have him in Ithaca.
Do you think you've been more of a role model, coach, training partner, or maybe just a friend in wrestling? Or like, you coached him at Who's Number One. I thought that was really cool. And then you've talked about being a training partner. Are you just kind of everywhere, wherever he needs you to be, you're there? Or do you kind of – are you in one position, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's like family is family, so.
Right.
Whatever he needs from me, I'm never going to, intrude on him or, be too over the top. And, I'm never going to, be invasive in his life, because that's not my job. I'm not his coach. I'm not his dad,
Right.
But he always knows I'm going to be there for him. And, I think he does like having me in the corner. It's something that, counteracts with my dad. And, it's someone who he can look to as like a friend, to have around him.
Mm-hmm.
I think it'll be similar. He's at school. I'm not going to be down his throat, just because he's my little brother. It's, at some point, you got to grow up. It's the same thing that happened to me. Like, I had to go away from home to grow up, and learn how to be independent. It's the same thing for him. So, he's always going to know I'm going to be there for him. But, I'm going to let him do his own thing. And, we both understand that if he ever needed me or I needed him, the other would be there.
Right. All right, Yanni, that's all I have for you. I really, really thank you for allowing me to interview you on my podcast. It was a great time. This thing's gone about an hour and 15 minutes, so one of the best shows we've had.
Yeah, don't worry about it. Thank you for having me on. You had some really awesome stuff to ask, so.
Thanks, man. I hope we can have you back on here sometime. Maybe after you win a world championships, hopefully.
Yeah.
And we'll get to chat some more.
Yeah, man, best of luck with this. You're doing awesome.
Thank you.
No problem.
All right.